Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. You can follow us on Twitter at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, how's it going, buddy?
It's going, dude. I got back from the gym today and I had something that like really perturbed me. And it was so the bottom of my screen. I don't know if you use Windows or not, but I have a PC because it's more customizable. So don't come at me with the whole Mac thing. But I came back and the bar across the bottom is usually like a black gray type thing and it's white. So I restarted my computer thinking it would get rid of it, and it's not. I think it just might be the new Windows, and I'm like losing my friggin' mind.
Technology is the worst, man. It's the worst. So we've got a show today that's going to be a lot of fun. It's last-minute draft tips. We're including roster construction, answer some of the most commonly asked questions, and we're joined by Andy Holloway, the Fantasy Footballers, today. So we're going to be picking his brain as much as possible. Andy, you're recording like 20 shows a week right now. How are you hanging, man?
Not quite that many. I can relate to Tags' computer issue, though. My main laptop, which in this case is a Mac, is in the shop. I mean, it broke like 2 days ago. They gave me a loaner. It feels like I'm on a foreign land right now, and it comes during the busiest time of the year. So, I mean, we're pretty dependent on our technology, no doubt about it.
Right. That's awful timing. We were doing a live stream yesterday, a mock draft between Tags and I, and Tag sent someone over to my house and zapped my internet right in the middle of the live stream so he could win. Can you believe how ruthless he is? By the way, the live stream was on our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/fantasypros. You can check it out there. Subscribe, because we're going to have all kinds of content like these live streams throughout the season.
I bet you ended up with Lamar Miller and Andrew Luck and a bunch of really talented options.
I was actually nice enough where I paused the draft and waited for him to come back.
Yeah, he waited like 20 minutes and did Q&A, which was really cool of him to do. And then he just whooped me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fair. He waited a long time. So
yeah, I did get auto-drafted one pick. It was Davante Adams. I was going to take Julio. But anyway, guys, first of all, Andy, we really appreciate you making this happen. Our listeners really appreciate it. I'm sure they want to know what you have to say, and there's going to be plenty of it today as we dive into all corners of fantasy football. Before we do, though, I want to tell you about the Draft Assistant. Guys, I absolutely love the Draft Assistant. Frankly, I have no idea what it would be like to do a draft without the Draft Assistant because I rely on it so much. It can sync with your draft and offer pick suggestions, along with the percentage odds of any player getting taken before your next pick. We've also got this co-pilot feature that allows you to draft straight from the Draft Assistant for NFL.com and ESPN drafts. Plus, it's just got this sleek layout. Our developers do an awesome job with this. It's very easy to use, super user-friendly, especially since it uses the same interface as our draft simulator. Guys, we support all kinds of leagues from any kinds of commissioner sites like ESPN, NFL.com, Yahoo, and CBS Sports, along with many others. You can crush your draft using our draft assistant at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard. All right, guys, now we're going to get into the questions and answers and, roster construction, everything like that. But first, we have a couple pieces of news. First, we got to start with Zeke. Jerry Jones is saying at this point, it looks like he's probably going to be out 1 to 6 weeks. Now, Tags, have you seen this report, and do you buy anything that Jerry Jones is saying?
No, it's just him saying we're prepared to be without Zeke. I don't expect him on the field week one now, and it's becoming more and more real. Guys, I mean, we're less than 1 week away from the start of the NFL season, and Zeke is still not showing up to sign his contract. So
he's not even in the country. He's in Mexico right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a private jet. Jerry Jones will go pick him up if they get a deal done. I'm not worried about that. But
I guess it's no different than being in, like, Kansas from Texas.
Well, right. It just goes back to what I said, last week when I told people going into their drafts last weekend. I said, if he hasn't signed his contract, you can't draft him in the first round. I'm really curious to hear Andy's take about this just because it's a very pressing subject, and people, like, legitimately have called me out. How dare you not take Zeke ahead of, like, someone like Nick Chubb? And I'm like, guys, like, if he's not on the field, he's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, I've heard all sorts of things this week. It's been crazy. Someone who had drafted David Johnson and then later on got Tony Pollard asked the question, do you trade David Johnson straight up for Zeke now that you have the Pollard insurance? And, you know, obviously if Zeke was active, you would be looking at that trade saying, okay, maybe I want Zeke more than I do David Johnson. All I can say about this situation is that, you know, Jerry Jones is going to position himself to have deniability, to have a positive spin on missing games. He has to put the face forward of, look, we don't need him right now. We need him halfway through the year. We need him for the playoffs. He'll be back. It's just all posturing, negotiation tactics. I expect him to miss games. I mean, I expect him to miss games now. How many, you know, what that does for him in your draft, it's all risk aversion. It's whether or not you want to dance with the devil. Do you want to deal with that, or do you want to take a David Johnson who you know will be on the field week one? None of us know exactly what's going to happen. You even hear Tony Romo come out. It's like he's 50-50 on knowing whether or not Zeke would be there on week one. And I don't care about contract stipulations. I don't care about legalese. I don't care about tolling contracts at all when it comes to pride and this amount of dollars. It's just a matter of risk. And you could draft him and you could miss 2 weeks. You could miss 6 weeks. And I'll even say he could miss the whole year because pride's involved and you just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately for the Cowboys' sake, they're playing the Giants week one, the Redskins week two, and the Dolphins week three. Like, they can go 3-0 without Zeke. I think that's a realistic possibility. So for them not pressing here, it kind of makes some sense.
You would think that he would be rushing back at that point, but we said the same thing about Le'Veon Bell. James Conner dominated at the start. We're like, Le'Veon, you better come back, man, or you're going to miss out on a bunch of money. And, of course, he was a little bit stingy about it. I don't know. I kind of, you know, I know Le'Veon Bell missed out on a lot of money, but he also got to renew his body to taking a beating year after year and then taking a year off. I think he'll come back and be all right. I just don't love the fit with the Jets. Now, I wanted to mention this on Melvin Gordon. I just tweeted it out. So how many games do you guys think Melvin Gordon is going to miss? Because he missed four last season, and he was still a top six fantasy football running back. So are you guys, like, banking on him on missing 8, 9, 10 games? He's going running back 20 right now, Tags.
So, Andy, what's the terms in this? So I got him in an auction last night for $20 on a $200 auction. It was around the RB30 price that I paid, so I felt like that was more than enough value. Like, risk is worth reward at that point. But do you know any of the ins and outs of this contract situation in terms of, is it 8 games played, or is it... Someone told me it was 6 games played. Some people told me it was 8. There's just, like, a mixed signal out there.
Sure. I think it's the Joey Galloway rule where he needs to toll the contract to become, you know, put himself in the right position for next year, which would mean that he can come back, you know, as long as he plays 8 games, his contract tolls. That's kind of the principle I've been approaching it with is, hey, Melvin Gordon's worth 8 games right now. It's weird because the Zeke situation, you at least have people making offers. That's been at least what we hear, right? There are, you know, there's communication, then it dies down. There's communication. We haven't heard a lot of communication on Melvin Gordon's front, and this team is a different franchise, so I'm treating Gordon like I'll have him for potentially 8 games. I think the price you paid's probably fine for what Melvin Gordon represents in that offense, but we don't know what kind of success Eckler's going to have or Justin Jackson, how urgent the team will feel about, okay, Gordon comes back. Is he getting a Melvin Gordon workload week one? I mean, likely he is, but I just don't know how bad this will deteriorate in the public eye over the course of 6, 7, 8 weeks. So it's not a fun, it's the least fun thing to talk about for fantasy football is these contract situations. And unfortunately we're in it with 2 more guys this year.
It's going to make or break the leagues too. If Melvin Gordon comes back and if you get Zeke and Melvin Gordon, they both come back, you're winning your league. And if you draft either of these guys and they hold out for a long time, you're absolutely screwed. So it just depends on how risky you want to be. I'm fine with the risk. Now, guys, a couple quick pieces of news. Jerick McKinnon's going on IR. This means, obviously, Matt Breida is a good value at ADP. We've talked about this show in and show out. Whichever expert comes on every single time, they're talking about draft Matt Breida. Tevin Coleman's stock maybe goes up a little bit. Julian Edelman suffered a hand injury. It's no big deal. I know what you guys are thinking. He had that previously. He would have played if it would have been regular season. He would have continued. He'd play tomorrow if he needed to. But I want to talk about Kiki QT, because a couple weeks ago, you remember, everyone was like, ah, man, Kiki QT is going to miss the season. Now, the Texans are saying he's trending towards playing in week one now, Andy.
Yeah, and he fits that category of kind of, you know, very late round players that have an opportunity, but he's never been able to stay healthy. I mean, do you want to go into week one with QT and the upside and what we saw some of last year, but with the injury downside? Do you want to roll the dice with a Cole Beasley or an Adam Humphries or a Jamison Crowder? Like, there are a number of these PPR guys that one or two of them are going to pop off in week one and be the darling of the waiver wire, but not really offer enough long-term success for that roster. We know Will Fuller's healthy. We know DeAndre Hopkins is healthy. I'm interested in QT if he's back week one. I'm just not sure he'll be able to turn the corner enough. One day it's, you know, I'm not optimistic. Bill O'Brien says that. The next day I am. If you know, if he's going to miss a week or two, you just don't bother. That's at least my approach.
Now, Tex, you know I like Kiki QT a little bit more than Will Fuller. Fuller's coming off the ACL as well, and he has looked all right, but I'm not sure he'll be quite up to speed like he was the previous years, just because that's the way ACLs have worked in the past. I'm not okay with starting Kiki QT in week one until we know what's going. Like, even if he was playing, I wouldn't start him in week one. I want to see him on the field and see him be healthy and see him look good. But where would you draft him right now, Tex?
QT is outside my top 50 right now. I'm not really excited to plug him in any lineup. And I just don't know how effective he's going to be, because last year he tried playing through a couple injuries. He ended up leaving the game multiple times. He's the third option in that offense. Let's be real about it. I know he might have had more targets than Will Fuller, but they weren't like...
Way more targets than Will Fuller.
Yeah, they weren't more valuable targets in terms of like where they were on the field. Duke Johnson being added to that offense since that injury brought down his ceiling a little bit too, because Duke Johnson's a better receiver than Lamar Miller was. So there's a lot to pack here. You know, that defense is going to allow some points, but I don't think they're going to suddenly go to like one of the worst defenses in the league where they can support, you know, three top 40 wide receivers.
Andy, if the Texans do end up trading for Tunzel, he's a great offensive lineman, would this make you more inclined to draft someone like Duke Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson?
You know, I like the offense regardless, just because Watson can get outside the pocket and make things happen. I don't think we've seen a stifling of DeAndre Hopkins' ceiling with a terrible offensive line, but I certainly would feel more confident in the week-to-week stability of somebody like Watson. And I just can't believe that Duke Johnson's going to be sitting there alone in this backfield a week from now. The cuts are happening, whether it's a Kenneth Dixon, you know, who knows, LeSean McCoy.
Carlos Hyde, maybe?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's another name that comes to mind. I mean, these cuts are taking place over the next few days, so I kind of tend to think that Duke's being drafted at his ceiling right now. I've seen him go very high, people trying to buy the upside. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong, but it certainly helps to improve what right now looks like a terrible offensive line.
I saw him in the fourth round yesterday, and that is just crazy to me. I think it is going to be LeSean McCoy. The Bills would have to pay him an outrageous amount of money if they don't cut him by this weekend. So I would imagine we're going to be hearing about that soon, and I would expect him to sign with Houston.
If you don't mind me jumping in real quick, that's another reason why, if you're skittish on like Devin Singletary and you're wondering, well, maybe McCoy, Gore, it seems like those are the guys, I'm not going to draft Singletary very late. Like, he is a perfect, just put him on your roster, wait and see what the cuts look like, wait and see what week one looks like, and then let him go if it doesn't look great. But if they cut McCoy, everything changes for the outlook for Singletary.
Mm-hmm. That's a good call, Andy. I like that. All right, guys, we're going to hop into roster construction here in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite place to play best ball, Draft. Guys, redraft leagues, dynasty leagues, they're great. But if you haven't tried best ball, you are going to absolutely love it. I know Tags and I have both done over 100 best ball drafts this year because it's just so much fun. Here's how best ball works, okay? It's season long, but with no management. You just draft your team and forget about it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. You don't even have to set your lineup. You get the best players automatically started, and you'll get your best score every week guaranteed. There's no salary caps. You play in a real live snake draft, just like the ones you play in with your friends in a season-long league. And there's no better place to play than Draft. It's got the sleekest interface, super easy to use. You can draft a team anytime you want. Leagues start every couple minutes. You can join one right now. And Draft has the biggest NFL season-long tournament ever going on right now. You can enter for your shot to win $1 million. It's a $3.5 million prize pool in the Best Ball Championship on Draft. And that's right. The winner gets $1 million in real money. It is freaking huge. Just do your draft. You could become a millionaire 16 weeks later. It doesn't get any easier than that. Join me and Tags today on Draft. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in the app or Play Store and join a game in minutes. Or play right from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, you can get a free entry into this Best Ball Championship when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code. It's FANTASYPROS, all one word. That's right, a free shot at $1 million just by using the promo code Fantasy Pros when you make your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the app or Play Store or go to draft.com and come play free with promo code Fantasy Pros. Okay, guys, so in terms of roster construction, there's a lot of people who are more casual fantasy football players who are listening for maybe the first time. They've got their drafts coming up this weekend. So, Tags, I'm going to let you start out. Just how many quarterbacks should you draft? Because a lot of these people are going to be drafting two, some maybe even three. What would you recommend?
It really depends on your roster. Understand like how big is the bench in the league. So if you're playing in a league with like 8 bench spots, I'm okay with taking 2 quarterbacks. If you're playing in a league with 4 bench spots, absolutely not. You can't afford to do that. You need to stack some wide receivers and running backs on your bench in case of injury, in case of whatever, like a brutal matchup for your RB2, your wide receiver 3, whatever the case is. But in a regular 16 round draft where it's like, you know, you have 6 bench spots and you have 10 starters, Let's look at it this way. If you draft, you know, a quarterback and you take one of the top 6 guys, you're not drafting a backup quarterback because you're essentially hoping that that guy turns into an every week starter for you. If you wait and you're someone like me, like you might wait on Jameis Winston and you feel like you feel pretty good about that. If you want to pair him with someone like Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray as the QB 13 or 14 off the board, as long as they're falling in the draft, that's my take on it, is that if your league drafts multiple quarterbacks and you know that, you know, they're going to continually come off the board and you'd have to pay like a high dollar amount to get them there, no, you're not going to draft 2 quarterbacks in the, you know, in the top 12 rounds. I'm talking about like in a draft the other day, I ended up getting Jameis Winston and Mitch Trubisky. I want to say it was for a 12th and a 14th round pick. Because I believe there's upside built in both of those guys for top 5 quarterbacks. I didn't like the options later in the draft. I'm not like completely, like, I don't feel like both of them are can't miss players. So I'm okay drafting 2 quarterbacks that way. But
that's how a lot of people got Patrick Mahomes last year, was drafting a guy with upside and drafting a safer player.
Yeah. And I mean, Andy, I'm sure, would agree in terms of Kyler Murray, the upside that he presents. I know a lot of people are down on the Cardinals after, you know, seeing their preseason, but they talked about the fact they weren't going to show much. They weren't going to show their cards during the preseason. And I'm not selling my shares of the Cardinals offense. I'm still buying it. I think that defense is going to be terrible, especially without Patrick Peterson. They're going to allow some points. They're going to need to run a lot of plays. So, you know, if you want to grab 2 upside quarterbacks like a Kyler Murray, like a Jameis Winston, you know, like guys in that range, I'm not opposed to it.
Sure.
I'm doing the same thing everywhere. I completely agree, whether it's Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, or Kyler Murray with, you know, the last pick. If I've gone late round quarterback, why not have them on your bench already to see what happens week one? You mentioned Patrick Mahomes in our league of record last year. He was a post-draft waiver ad before week one for my team, because why not just see what you have in there? Your goal with late round quarterback is not to live the streaming life. Your goal is to find the diamond in the rough at no cost in your draft, and you give yourself a better opportunity. So I'm 100% in on that strategy, especially this year where you have these, you know, you brought up the Cardinals preseason. You're dead right about 2 things. One is it was very vanilla. 2, their defense is going to be so disgusting. I'm telling you, I'm going to have to look away from my TV. It looked bad with Peterson and Alford on the field. Now you lost Alford for the first half of the year, and Peterson's out. It's going to be bad, and Kyler wasn't running the football downfield. He was evading a little bit in the pocket and then running out of bounds or going down. He wasn't going to risk his body in the preseason. And if he's running wild, regardless of how good this offense really ends up, give him 50, 60, 70 yards on the ground a week, and you're going to be in great shape.
Yes.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, you mentioned that Cardinals defense. I'm stacking the Lions in week one, not because I love the Lions, because it's going to be an up-paced game and it's going to be high scoring and they're cheap. So I like that call a lot. Now, you mentioned late round quarterback, and I get this question a lot. Like anytime I go to, you know, the grocery store, I'm playing softball with my friends in town. What is your strategy? And I think that to say that you have a strategy is a bad strategy, because then you have to stick to that. You can be flexible, but you know, you talk about late round quarterback. A lot of people who come on this podcast talk about late round quarterback. And I agree with that idea that, you know, the value over replacement for the QB6 year after year is less than the top streamer. If you add the top streamer 16 weeks in a row compared to the QB6. But at what point do you draft someone like Aaron Rodgers, Andy, or Matt Ryan if they fall far enough?
Well, I did have Matt Ryan drop to the 12th round of a draft the other day. And he was on the board with Baker, and I had no shares of Baker because he always goes higher than I wanted him. So I went Ryan. I went with my rankings, but seeing both of those guys there, it was kind of one of those drafts where everybody's in on the late-round quarterback idea, so they just got kicked down the board. You know, when it comes to somebody like Rodgers, two or three rounds beyond ADP, I'm comfortable if they slip to that spot. It's not like I'm sitting here wanting a painful streaming experience every week. But, you know, it was a very weird year for Aaron Rodgers. I know he's not going to throw interceptions, but he was not as efficient as he had been in the past. He's getting up there in age. That doesn't mean he's not a top five quarterback, but it also means the guarantee of the earlier Rodgers years isn't there. And so, you know, I'm trying my best to wait. There are times where the stack becomes really attractive to me of, if I ended up with DeAndre Hopkins early and then Deshaun Watson is sitting there like a round or two behind ADP, I've had moments of weakness where I've just jumped in, just wanting that stack. So those are the times when I jump in on the quarterback a little earlier.
Okay. Now, we all tend to wait a little bit longer on quarterback. I guess there's situations where we would draft a quarterback a little bit earlier, but we're waiting on quarterback. So Tags, in the early rounds, it's mostly running back, wide receiver, unless you can get one of these guys, Kelsey in the second round, Ertz or Kittle in the third round, Howard in the fifth, Hunter Henry in the sixth, something along those lines. But when you're going running back and wide receiver, what if you start wide receiver. Is that okay this year?
I'm not opposed to starting wide receiver, especially if you're like at the seventh pick in your draft and you know, Nick Chubb comes off the board, David Johnson comes off the board, and you feel like you're reaching to grab someone like Le'Veon Bell. And I would agree with you. You want to take a wide receiver there, but then by the time it comes back to you in the second round, Dalvin Cook's gone and you're looking at it and you're like, I don't want to reach for Chris Carson. I don't want to reach for Aaron Jones. I feel like I should be able to get those guys in the third round. This is the exact situation that happened to me in my home league. I wound up drafting Juju Smith-Schuster and Davante Adams at number one and number two, like my first and second picks, because I had the seventh overall pick and I wasn't able to get those players I wanted. So I did go wide receiver. Unfortunately, my league mates know exactly who I want, and all the players that I wanted at running back were gone in the third round, but I made it work, and it was like a makeshift roster. And James White is someone that you can get, you know, in the middle rounds that has plenty of value. You can find value at running backs. I think once you get outside that elite tier, I think Dalvin Cook is probably the end of it for me, where it's like, that's the guys where it's like, okay, these guys are in the elite tier. After that, it's like, we're going to piece together our roster. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys in that, I'll call it the 13 to 19 or 20 range, that I think you could land is like, as your RB1, not feel great about it, but know that you have two studs at wide receiver.
This year, I feel really comfortable waiting, going wide receiver, or maybe starting Julio and Travis Kelce, something along those lines, just because there's...
I can't do the tight end thing. I can't, because basically then you don't...
There's so many values in the third, fourth, fifth round at running back, though. I mean, you could go from that point, Aaron Jones, Chris Carson, Sony Michel, and I feel pretty good about it. Andy, what do you think about that?
I have been happiest this offseason, and now we kind of get to reflect on all these drafts and the mock drafts.
Sure.
I've been the happiest on the teams where I've ended up running back, believe it or not.
Me too.
And then pivoting to value. But if you can guarantee me my roster is going to end up with Chris Carson in the third, Sony Michel in the fourth, I would be drafting wide receivers at the top of my draft all day, because I love both of those players. I don't know where you guys stand on them.
Oh, yeah.
But if I could end up, you know...
They're both targets for both of us.
I just love the guaranteed workload and upside for both those players. So it gets a little bit shaky. I mean, I've been in these drafts where I go wide receivers early and I don't get my Chris Carson or my Sony Michel share. And then I'm sitting there going, do I really feel amazing with, Aaron Jones and Mark Ingram or something? You know, I don't want to be in that boat, but I haven't really taken the plunge on a tight end to answer that question early in draft.
So when are you taking your tight end? Who are the guys that you're targeting this year, Andy?
Yeah, I just end up waiting. You know, I love I was getting Evan Engram in the sixth round earlier, not so much lately for some reason, but Engram was a target just from a target share perspective. Vance McDonald before he started moving up draft boards, but most often lately I just end up trying to find that value pick later in drafts, whether it's a week one shot with Mark Andrews or whether it's a stability play with Delanie Walker. And, you know, it's not like I'm comfortable with those guys, but it's just a sacrifice I make for running back and wide receiver depth.
That's right. That part of your team doesn't look good, but the rest of your team looks awesome. So I can understand that. I'm preferring to grab Hunter Henry, and if not, Austin Hooper, maybe in the 10th round, just because he had so many receptions last year. And it's a high-powered offense that I want to tie myself to. Now, we talked about the early rounds, but like, at what point should you grab your RB3, RB4? When would you be upset with yourself if you don't have that RB3 or RB4 tags?
Well, this is a much bigger conversation, and we did a live stream yesterday where it was beat tags in a mock draft and win free upgrades, and I try and talk through those live streams about what I'm doing in a draft and why I'm doing what I'm doing. It really depends on what you do. You know, if you go running back to start your draft, you probably have two stud running backs in your roster that you understand they have giant workloads, and you're not going to worry about the matchups. You're just going to plug and play them every single week. Because of that, you can kind of avoid the running back position as you go in the draft. Because you went with running back, you're going to need to play the matchups a little bit at wide receiver, because your wide receiver two or wide receiver three is probably going to be outside the top 20 at the position. And that's when you get into those guys that are a little bit more matchup dependent, target dependent. So it really depends. And like, I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they're doing their drafts is not properly evaluating their roster. You know, it's one of those things where you have to look at it and say, who did I select in the first round? Did I take Le'Veon Bell? I didn't take Le'Veon Bell, but I'm just saying if someone did, and then they get to the second round and they drafted Antonio Brown, and it's like they're looking at their roster and they're like, I don't know if I have league-winning upside here. So with your picks later in the draft, as you get into those middle rounds, you're going to want to take players that may present some volatility because you have sturdy players, but you're lacking upside. And then there's like the exact opposite scenario where you're taking nothing but upside at the top of your draft. You're taking guys like Tyreek Hill. You're taking guys like maybe like an Aaron Jones, where you're shooting for the ceiling, but you understand that there's risk involved. Later in the draft, you're going to have to take some guys that offer some more consistency. So that's one of those things, like constantly evaluate your roster as you're going through the draft.
If I don't have my RB3 Andy before the 7th round, Latavius Murray, first of all, is going to be on virtually all of my teams. Here it is. I've already done all my drafts, basically. Who is the RB3 that you've been winding up with more often than not?
I like Matt Breida. I like Matt Breida all offseason. I see no reason why he can't be a 50-50 timeshare guy with Tevin Coleman. So he represents like a late round running back value to me. If you're looking kind of more in the Latavius range, then, you know, Tariq Cohen's sitting there. And I know David Montgomery is all the rage, and I for good reason. I mean, he's a great player, and he's going to have great opportunity. But I like the fact that Tariq Cohen spent about 30% of the time outside the backfield in the slot, lined up out wide. He probably represents kind of the same kind of James White-esque type of week-to-week production that Tags brought up. I will say this. It's kind of funny. I was in a 14-team league. We did a listener league draft. I went running back, running back, running back. And in that league, I never took another running back the rest of the draft. And I set out to do that. I didn't decide, oh, I'm only taking three at the top and never touching one again. But that's the way the draft ended up, and it was fine. And there's something to be said about, like, people want a prescription for their draft. They want to be told, I mean, you guys get the questions all the time, I'm sure. Like, do I go running back, wide receiver, running back, tight end, running back, wide receiver, like in this order? And the thing is, you know, we always say stay water on our show. And, you know, there's something to be said about knowing what you have to address in the draft. And whenever I've gone running back, running back, running back, I know what I'm dealing with. I feel like that position's figured out.
Sure.
And now I'm looking at value. Now I'm drafting T.Y. Hilton and A.J. Green because I know I've got a ceiling with A.J. Green if he comes back. Or I've got upside with T.Y. Hilton if, you know, if people are just imbuing 2017 stats on him. So there's something to be said about knowing what to tackle, whether you go a bunch of wide receivers early or a bunch of running backs early, just having that knowledge in your mind.
I always say just draft the best player available in the first three rounds, whether it's wide receiver, running back, or what have you, and then you figure it out after then, just because there's so much of a difference between the number 15 player in terms of VBD, value-based drafting, and the number 20 player compared to like the 50th player and the 70th player. You can reach for guys in the fifth round if you need to fill a hole in your roster. If you do it in the third round because you think that you need one running back and one wide receiver or two running backs and two wide receivers in the first four rounds, you're missing out on a lot more value than if you do it later in the draft. All right, guys, and then finally, I want to ask about the benches, what we do here. Are you targeting guys, Andy, that you can rely on week to week? We know there's going to be injuries. We know there's going to be buys. Or do you pick those guys up later in the year as streamers and go for upside in your drafts in the last few rounds?
The only kind of upside that I go for on my bench is the kind where I get to see if I'm right early. I'm not going to take a player and stuff him on my bench and then pretend like I'm going to have the courage to keep him there and wait and see. If I, you know, if you draft Devin Singletary right now as it stands and LeSean McCoy, Frank Gore there, you're probably going to cut Devin Singletary in a week or two. So I like taking, for part of my bench, if I'm taking upside players, I want to know week one, week two, whether I have somebody special. And then I probably have a couple ugly players on my bench. I probably have a Peyton Barber sitting there as an emergency for when DeSean Jackson breaks his finger or when, you know.
It's a good name for, that's a great example for an ugly player.
I mean, it's true. And, you know, Lamar Miller was kind of like that mid to late round example for a long time of just ho-hum, put carries on my bench. And so I probably have a combination of guys that I know are either going to pay off for me week one and I can take a victory lap or I can cut them and move on to the waiver wire.
So you were talking about some of those guys you'll know right away. Do you have a couple in mind, like the guys that you're ending up with a lot that have the upside? You'll find out quickly.
Well, I think Mark Andrews probably fits that category, tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. I think he fits the, if he comes out there, has a significant role, looks like the favorite target, I'm going to know that early, and I don't have to spend massive draft capital on him. I even think a player that I haven't been, you know, Mike has been really heralding him, someone like Alexander Mattison, running back from Minnesota. How big of a role is carved out behind Dalvin Cook? Because it was a pretty okay role for Latavius Murray a year ago. If it's nothing, then I move on. You know, so in one of my leagues, it's disgusting. I hate it. Maybe this is terrible advice, but I have Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones just because I am going to see what week one looks like. And if for some reason something happens, it's taking up two spots. I kind of want to throw up every time I look at my bench, but it's part of the roster. So I think, you know, Justice Hill is another guy. Is he going to carve out a role? Jalen Samuels, how much of a role does he have in Pittsburgh? So I just want players that I know I'm going to see something from them in week one as opposed to waiting 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, I'm just not going to wait.
You talked about the two Tampa Bay running backs, Ronald Jones, Peyton Barber, and I guess we could throw Dare in there as well. But the thing is, like, Andy, if your mom was signed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers under Bruce Arians, she'd rush for 1,000 yards if she got enough carries. It's not that they have a good offensive line. It's that Bruce Arians is fantasy magic for running backs.
Well, he's also interestingly stubborn. I mean, we've had him out here in Arizona, and I have two beliefs about him. One, we saw him be very stubborn with David Johnson in his rookie year. Chris Johnson,
yep,
the ghost of Chris Johnson, received the majority of the work in a year where David Johnson basically made his fantasy hay on big-time plays. You know, he had some kick returns, things like that. Didn't get a lot of carries. So, you know, that argument, I guess, speaks to I'm going to give Peyton Barber the work if I feel like Peyton Barber's the professional in my backfield. The other thing is that I don't think he's a patient head coach. So if Barber or Jones or Ogunbowale or Ellington is doing something right, I don't think he's going to look at it and go, boy, our draft capital on Ronald Jones is going to force me to put him on the field. I think he's impatient. He's going to want the best player out there. You're not wrong. I mean, if the offense is good, then we can see value. But I feel like last year you had one of the best offenses in the league in terms of total yardage, and Barber still was kind of just okay. So the whole backfield confused me.
Yeah. Well, Dirk Cutter is death for fantasy running backs. You're going from the worst coach for running backs to one of the best.
Okay.
So I don't know. I just think there is going to be some value in one of these guys, and no one wants to draft them. We're not even really talking about them much, but
it's true.
One of these guys is going to be the starter, and one of them is going to end up with quite a few fantasy points tags. What do you think?
Barber is so boring. I can't bring myself to draft him. It's like drafting Frank Gore. I'm not kidding.
Just listen to his name. I've brought this up. Peyton Barber.
It's not great. So I actually drafted Ronald Jones at like literally a dollar in an auction league, just putting him on my bench, hoping for something there. And I think Andy, you make a good point, but I think this is a really good conversation to have because there's so many things going on right now with Ezekiel Elliott, with Melvin Gordon, with AJ Green going to miss, we think, you know, 3 weeks. We don't know. They really haven't told us anything about it. We know that Golden Tate's going to be out 4 weeks. So basically how I'm constructing my bench, if you draft one of those guys, you're going to need to draft a little bit safer. You might want to grab someone like Mohamed Sanu, someone that's going to give you a decent floor for your bench rather than shooting for the ceiling with someone like maybe like a James Washington, where it's like you have to play it a little bit closer to the vest in those leagues where it's like, you know, you got the upside in those players, but you also know that you're paying a price to do so. So on your bench, you're going to want guys that can contribute right away. Whereas if I have a team that I know they're healthy, they're going to be on the field, I'm taking nothing but upside. You know, people ask me all the time, should I handcuff this guy? Should I trade for this? First off, you don't aim for handcuffs. The only handcuff this year that I think is a necessity is Damian Williams and Darwin Thompson. That's it. And the only reason I say that is because if you get one in the third round and one in the ninth round, you're locked into an RB1, RB2 at worst with a third and ninth round pick. And I think anybody would pay that price. So I'm willing to handcuff that because Andy Reid has just proven it time and time again. Whereas this Bucs team, man, I was the biggest cheerleader for Ronald Jones earlier this offseason, saying that I did believe that he was going to be the guy. Everything that the Bucs did this offseason was talk about Ronald Jones, talk him up. They didn't trade for a running back. They didn't sign a running back. They didn't draft a running back in this class. They had plenty of opportunities too. And all they did was bring in Andre Ellington, a guy that played for Bruce Arians before. And we know Peyton Barber is just a guy. Like, he's the definition of just a guy. So let's see what we have in Ronald Jones. We might have lightning in a bottle. The guy did score a ton of touchdowns at USC alongside Sam Darnold. The issue, though, is that the more that I watch this Bucs team, the more I'm like, dear Lord, that defense is terrible. Like, that back end is going to allow some serious points. And I don't even know if they're going to run the ball 20 times per game. I think there's going to be a lot of pass attempts, and none of them are really best suited in the passing game. So that's the part that has me a little concerned. I know they've talked about using Jones in that role, but yeah, it's an interesting conversation. And again, it's going back to the idea that you have to evaluate your roster and understand what you have and what you're going to need. Because if you have a team that's healthy, ideally, you're not benching those players. You're not moving them. You just have high upside running backs on your roster because bye weeks don't even start until week 4. So it's just all about evaluating the roster.
I'm going to talk about what I like to do at the end of my bench here in just a moment. But first, I'm going to tell you guys about Monkey Knife Fight. Did you guys ever hear the joke about the monkey with a knife that walked into a bar? Me neither, because that wouldn't make any sense. But you know what does make sense? Playing daily fantasy sports prop games at monkeyknifefight.com. And you know what makes even more sense than that? Signing up now at monkeyknifefight.com and making a deposit, because all first-time depositors can get a huge deposit bonus. Up to $500, to be specific. That's a lot of sweet coin you could use to play with on their site. And if you haven't been to monkeyknifefight.com, friends, you're in for a treat. They've got loads of fun games that are easy to play. On Monkey Knife Fight, you can play contests from just one game. That means you could pick a contest like Over-Under and pit Aaron Rodgers against Mitch Trubisky. And there's tons of others to choose from, including fan favorites like their 5-out-of-5 contest that can score you 17 to 20 times your entry. Crazy, right? That's MonkeyKnifeFight.com. Anyone can win, which is why you should set up an account at MonkeyKnifeFight.com, make a deposit, and claim a first-time depositor bonus of up to $500. When you sign up at MonkeyKnifeFight.com, don't forget to use promo code FANTASYPROS, all one word, to get your bonus. That's MonkeyKnifeFight.com with promo code FANTASYPROS. Monkey fight, monkey win. Remember when I was talking about our draft assistant? Only MVP and Hall of Fame members can sync that draft assistant with their online drafts, but you can get Hall of Fame now with a special $10 offer we've got going on with Monkey Knife Fight for 6 months of our Hall of Fame package, a $65 value. Check this out at fantasypros.com/offers, and all you have to do is head to fantasypros.com/offers and make a $10 deposit at Monkey Knife Fight, and you can win money with that $10 too, so it's basically free to get 6 months of full access to all our premium tools and content. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers. You know, I understand what you're saying, absolutely, Andy, but I also feel like if you do that, you're going to miss out on somebody like Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, James Conner. Those are the league winners in the past few years, and they were the guys who were stuck in great running offenses behind another running back. And then when it opened up, as often happens, I mean, 15-20% of the time, one of these starting running backs is going to go down. We just saw it with Lamar Miller. If that had happened to David Johnson, and I've got Chase Edmonds, I've got myself a high-end RB2. If it happens to, you know, if Zeke does hold out and I've got Tony Pollard, I've got myself, I think, an RB1 in this Dallas offense. So I do like getting those upside guys because, you know, it's fine. I know I'm probably going to be cutting 80% of them by the time the bye weeks roll around because there's just going to be better options to pick up. But I want that chance at a league winner. Tags, what do you think, Ben?
Like I said, it goes back to the idea of like what you're looking for. I mean, I'm always, if I'm not drafting one of those suspended guys, which I usually don't end up with Zeke, I usually don't end up with Melvin Gordon, even though I did last night. I have drafted AJ Green in two leagues now. I have Golden Tate in a lot of leagues because he's going in like the 12th round. And once he comes back after that 4-week suspension, he's going to be a sturdy wide receiver 3 flex option through bye weeks. So at the very least, a 12th round pick, if I can guarantee that, great. So in those leagues that I do have those players, I'm forced to grab, you know, some safer players. Maybe I do grab a LeSean McCoy just because he lacks upside. There's no doubt about that. But he's going to be on the field. He's going to be playing football for somebody.
Yeah, you can plug him in as an RB3 flex play week one.
Yes, like Chris Thompson is a guy that you can grab and just kind of plug into lineups and just like be like, okay, it's not going to be great, but at least he's going to give me something. Those are the guys that I'll grab in those leagues. But again, if you're searching for the upside, don't look at handcuffs. I don't even care who your running backs are. And another thing I want to make a point on, I've received a lot of questions the last few days about bye weeks. Do not even look at bye weeks. I'm not kidding. Like, do not even bother with them. They make absolutely zero. It does not change anything.
If you've got 8 guys on week 12 bye week.
Even better.
Good. Yeah, that's great. You're going to lose week 12 and you'll be the favorite in every other week.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you I haven't looked at my bye weeks until just now. So thank you for telling me not to look at them again. I don't even think about it because my teams don't even look the same 3-4 weeks into the year. So it doesn't even matter. We transactions, trades, waivers, all that stuff.
In best ball leagues, it's totally different. If you're doing one of these best ball leagues on draft, you have to pay attention to that.
Especially a tight end and quarterback. You can make that best ball mistake.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Another question that we get all the time as we roll into the Q&A segment. These are just the most commonly asked questions. What do you do about schedules? Do you look at someone like Robbie Anderson, Andy, and say, man, his schedule looks disastrous. Like, he's clearly the number one on the Jets, but he's going to be matched up by all these shadow cornerbacks. And there's only like 10 of them in the NFL, but we're talking about like 9-10 of his weeks are going to be against these guys. I don't know if I want to deal with Robbie Anderson. And what about the same thing? Do you look at a quarterback schedule, you know, and say he's got hard matchups coming up, or Matt Ryan's playing in the dome 13 of 16 weeks, and then the playoff schedules as well? Do schedules mean anything to you, Andy?
Maybe a tiebreaker, you know, between a couple of guys in the same tier. But I think because of so much turnover defensively, because of the way the game has progressed and people moving around the, you know, the formation, and I don't overemphasize it. Robbie's an interesting one specifically just because it does seem like he's really lined up against the number of top defenders. But at the same time, that's just splitting the difference between a couple guys that I'm on the fence. You know, I'm not overemphasizing it. Streaming quarterbacks, streaming defenses, things like that. Obviously, I'm watching the schedule, but I'm not overemphasizing it with position players.
Tags, what do you think about schedules? I know you've talked before about wide receivers matter. Wide receiver ones matter a little bit more in terms of schedules than everything else. Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. In terms of running backs and tight ends and stuff like that, I don't look at. I mean, strength of schedule means nothing to me, but wide receivers, it does a bit more. And then it's not looking at traditional strength of schedule and saying, oh, they're a good pass defense, so I don't want to play a receiver against them. It's more about looking at the cornerback talent. And I did talk about it earlier this offseason, but I'm sure there's plenty of people listening now that weren't listening then. So basically, every single year, we talk about the guys like Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown. These guys are always atop the wide receiver rankings because we know that they're the best football players in the game. Okay, so why can't we do the same thing on the quarterback front? I wrote an article over the last two seasons talking about which wide receivers have the toughest cornerback schedules. I basically go through the schedule, and it's a different way of looking at strength of schedule, but more aligning what teams have nasty cornerbacks that you really want to avoid with wide receiver ones. And Robbie Anderson obviously pops up on that list this year. Tyreek Hill has a bad matchup, like throughout the year. He has actually the worst schedule among wide receivers. However, Tyreek Hill's a movable chess piece where it's like,
yeah, there's a lot of guys you can't line up against Tyreek Hill. Like Jalen Ramsey, sure, he can cover anyone. He can cover Gronk, he can cover Tyreek Hill. A lot of these cornerbacks, they're not going to be able to cover Tyreek Hill. They're going to figure something else out or try to.
Andy Reid moves them all around. A lot of the cornerbacks don't even go into the slot, and Tyreek Hill's been going in there like 40% of the time. So you have to pay attention. Like, these are all things that, being, you know, working in the industry, that I know these things because I research them all the time. But as Andy said, the only way that I even use that so much is more towards like breaking a tie. Like, if you're looking at players in a tier, that might help me lean towards one wide receiver over the other.
Yeah, something else interesting is I remember a couple other years, everyone was so excited about Jameis Winston because he's going to get the Saints in weeks 14 and 16. You get the Saints, horrible defense, two shootouts in the playoffs of fantasy football, And then what do you know? The Saints bust out. They're a top three DST over the last 8 weeks. They were just stellar. I mean, you look at some of these teams who were in the top, you know, 10 last year. The Kansas City Chiefs have a horrible defense. They were DST number 7 last year. It's just such a... Washington was DST 9 last year. It's just such a volatile position that I don't think you want to rely on these schedules and matchups this early in the season.
Correct. And I think we're all on the same page here. It's just about that cornerback wide receiver thing. That just matters a little bit more to me.
So, Andy, another question that we get all the time, and I'm sure that you've seen this one a dozen times or more. Is it okay to have guys on the same team? Like Nick Chubb in round 1, Odell Beckham in round 2, Stephon Diggs in round 3, Adam Thielen in round 4. Are you okay with that?
Who's getting Thielen in 4? I want it in that league.
I'm okay with that if I'm attached to a great offense or great players in and of themselves. So, right. You know, not every stack is Saquon and Odell Beckham Jr. like last year and can survive being on a team that wasn't a winning squad. So, you know, Mixon did it. And with AJ Green for a little while, but you cap your upside when you're on a team that doesn't score as much. And so I'm certainly willing to stack somebody like Chubb and Beckham. I'm willing to give myself as many options in a powerful offense. Same thing with, you know, teams like the Chiefs. I'm obviously going to attach myself to. I don't have a problem, you know, just dealing with the variable of, okay, two guys can't score on the same play. There's a level of consistency you get there too.
Andy, you just mentioned the Chiefs, and I'm going to come back to this. Sammy Watkins, please, like, do me, like, humor me here. Can you see a situation where we get to week 4, Sammy Watkins is a top 10 wide receiver, and you say, how did we not see this with Patrick Mahomes as the number 2 option in Patrick Mahomes' offense?
He's number 3. Travis Kelce's there, man.
Well, I mean, as a wide receiver, that offense is powerful. And like we're talking about, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin as top 20 options. Why aren't we talking about Mahomes' number 2 receiver?
We're not talking about him because we've been trying to talk about him for 5 years. I think that's the problem.
That's a great point.
And we've been trying to tell ourselves that he's okay, that it's all going to be okay. But to me, any player that's drafted in 2014 that you have to convince people is great in 2019, he's just not on my board for that reason. And you're not wrong. There is a percentage chance that we're saying that we're looking at Sammy Watkins in week 4 and saying, wow, he's caught 6 touchdown passes in 4 weeks and just happened to be the select chosen receiver for those games from Patrick Mahomes. But there's also a chance we're saying, wow, this team's ready to move on from him. He's a $21 million cap hit next year. Mecole Hardman has a way bigger role in the offense than we thought he did. And Damian Williams, Kelce, and Hill are really, you know, turning Watkins into the 4th or 5th option on a week-to-week basis. So the range of outcomes is what scares me off. Injury, consistency versus volatility.
That's fair.
I don't think you're wrong. I think it's within the range of outcomes simply because this offense is so darn good. And my goodness, Jason Moore would be freaking out and running around this office without pants if that happens. But I just have chosen, like, I've made a life choice. We do things for mental health. Uh-huh. Sammy Watkins is a part of my
oh my God,
life choices to avoid it.
That was a better answer than I could have ever expected. And by the way, I just want to say there's going to be a lot of people mad at me after week 1 because Sammy Watkins and the Chiefs are playing against the Jags. That means he's going to see A.J. Boye in coverage and Tyreek Hill is going to see Jalen Ramsey. So it's just going to be – I mean, I think the people that drafted Mahomes –
everyone's going to be panicking about Patrick Mahomes.
I think people that drafted Mahomes are going to be actually a little disappointed after week 1. That game's in Jacksonville, too.
Yeah, and they were the one team that towards the end of the year really stopped. I think Mahomes threw 0 touchdown passes against them. So
correct.
It's also one of the reasons I'm not drafting Jacksonville's defense, even though they get drafted in the top 2 or 3 picks every single week. It's like,
yeah, you can't use them in week 1. You're not going to roster 2-way DSTs.
Yes.
That's a really good call. All right, so I'm going to ask Tags a question really quick about draft order. But first, did you guys know we're on Instagram now? If you thought, I don't really want to sign up for Instagram. It's just a bunch of pictures. What does that matter to me? We're actually giving a lot of fantasy advice on Instagram. It's a really cool platform. You can check it out. We're at Fantasy Pros. And then Tags and I are at the same handles that we use on Twitter, at Mike Taglier NFL and at Bobby Fantasy Pro. And I'll be posting some food pictures as well along with all that fantasy advice. All right, guys, another question that I keep getting is, you know, some of these leagues allow you to pick your draft slots. Where are the best places to draft in a 12-team draft? Where are the worst? Tags, I'll let you start.
For the love of God, nobody say the turn. Nobody, I mean, the one turn, yes. But nobody say the 12-13. I actually was I was sitting down with Andy Behrens the other day and we were talking, and he basically goes, Mike, if you were to see like the logic behind it, the 12-13 is like the worst spot every year. Like, it's terrible. Like, the odds of winning from that spot are slim to none. It's not good at all. And I never understood why people said, oh, I want the 12-13 because it's like, I want two players in a row. Well, I get that, but then you're going to go 22 picks in between. I don't like that at all. I really hate that because you don't get value in your draft. You have to reach for your guys every single time because there's no way of projecting two rounds out. So I absolutely hate having the 12th pick. If I can't get one of the top three picks this year, I want to be right at like 5 or 6.
What do you think, Andy? I don't like 5 or 6 at all.
I want to be as far down in the first round. If I don't get one of the top three, like you said, which is my preferred, you know, I'd rather have Barkley, Kamara, McCaffrey.
Yeah.
But if I'm not, I probably want to go down as far as I can to be able to get, like, I'm still on board with David Johnson.
Yep.
Having a bounce back year. So if you put me at 6 or 7 and I can have David Johnson or even Nick Chubb and then come up back in the second round with a Dalvin Cook, I mean, that's my ideal situation if you aren't giving me those top three picks.
That's exactly what I'm hoping for, is Nick Chubb or David Johnson with that 6th pick. Usually you'll get one of theirs because someone will take DeAndre Hopkins in the top 6. Somebody might take Zeke. So, and then that second round, you're looking, you might have a choice between like a Juju, Tyreek Hill, or someone like a Dalvin Cook.
You know, I understand in past years why that would be the case, because there's usually this top tier of 5, 6 running backs at the very top, or Antonio Brown, who's super reliable. If you've got one of those picks, obviously you're going to be in better shape. But this year, there's just a tier of 3. They're not that much better than everybody else. Of course, I would rather have Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley in that order than anybody else. And then there's a big drop-off, and I feel like the difference between number 4 on my board, David Johnson, and number 16 on my board, Dalvin Cook, really isn't that much. But from 16 on, there's a huge drop-off. So I want one of those last 5 picks in the first round so I can get one of those first 5 picks in the second round, because then I feel like I have 2 studs. Otherwise, I've got 1, and then who am I drafting? Mike Evans? I'm reaching for Leonard Fournette in the second round? I don't want to do that. So Andy, what's your ideal pairing at the turn? If you've got pick number 10 and number 15.
Sure. No, I get it. I have a hard time leaving. If I'm drafting at the turn, I have a hard time leaving without a running back. So, you know, if I'm in a 12-team league and I can end up with, like, I'm okay taking Dalvin Cook at the turn. I mean, I'm all in on Dalvin Cook this year, so I like that. So I probably end up running back wide receiver more often than not at that situation, knowing that I'm probably wanting to take players that I view as slightly less risky because of the length of, you know, how long I have to wait for my next 2 picks. It's not my, I've hated mocking from that position this offseason. I've not enjoyed it. You know, just speaking to what Tag says, it's just not a good place to be in. It doesn't mean you can't win there. It's just more difficult.
All right, guys, a couple questions based on different league settings. So if this isn't you, forgive us. There's still going to be some advice in here that's impactful for you. But if you're in one of these super flex leagues or a 2-quarterback league, how much earlier should you be targeting a quarterback, Tags?
It depends, and I know I sound like a broken record because, like, I basically change my strategy on whatever draft I'm in and where players are going. So if you're in, like, a super flex league, and let's say it's a 12-team league, that means there's going to be 24 quarterbacks started on a weekly basis. You're going to have people vying for a backup quarterback. So ideally what you want is, we've talked about this before, is you want 2 quarterbacks that are locks not to lose their job. Like, you don't want to be starting Eli Manning. You don't want to be starting guys down like Ryan Fitzpatrick in a super flex league, just because those are guys that can lose their job literally at the drop of a hat, and then you're going to be screwed because you can't go to the waiver wire and pick up quarterbacks. So I generally wait. I'll wait until at least the second round, and I'll see how many quarterbacks are off the board. If I'm in the second round and, you know, only 1 quarterback has come off the board, I'll take a Deshaun Watson. I might take an Aaron Rodgers there. But usually those players are gone. There's usually 3 quarterbacks gone. I will pass in the second round, and I will wait, and I want to see basically the trends that are taking place. You know, if I get to the 3rd round pick and there's 10 quarterbacks gone, I probably want to grab one there, just because I don't want to be caught like with a spot where it's like, now you have, let's say you're in the middle of the 3rd round, you're gonna have, you know, another 12 picks that come back around to you. 8 quarterbacks can come off the board in that time, and then you're going to be panicking trying to find those 2 quarterbacks.
You're starting Jimmy G and Matthew Stafford, and Joe Flacco is your 3rd.
Exactly. So basically, I typically aim to try and get one of the top 12 quarterbacks, one of the top 24, and sometimes it works out with your rankings to where both those quarterbacks might have been top 12 for you. You might get Jameis Winston because people view him as the 16th quarterback off the board, but I have him as number 8. That's fine. But again, just don't get stuck in a position where you have to make trades and basically get abused in trades because you're missing a starting quarterback.
So, Andy, just to give them an idea, like, how early would you be willing to take Patrick Mahomes? You mentioned that, you know, if he falls to the two or three rounds later, fifth or sixth round, you might be willing to take him then. What about in a two quarterback league? Would you pull the trigger at some point in the first round if you had a chance?
I probably wouldn't. I second round, I'd be tempted. You know, I love, obviously, Patrick Mahomes. How do you not? But we've been down this road before with other players, and the fact that you only have had, what, three guys that have thrown 50 touchdown passes, the potential for regression. Like, you draft Patrick Mahomes at 103 or 105, you have to get Patrick Mahomes. That's the guarantee. You have to have exactly what he was. So in those two quarterback leagues, I'm probably right now, like this year, looking at, you know, Matt Ryan or Carson Wentz somewhere in the third round, and then trying to kick the can down the road as far as I feel comfortable to, you know, do I take, you know, Josh Allen as my QB2 in the seventh round? Sure. Don't mind it. Take a shot even later if I want. Gets scarier. You know, do you want Sam Darnold as your two? I think he's a top 24 guy to fit the tags mold there. So could go that direction, but, you know, you're competing at every other position. You obviously have to change the value of quarterbacks tremendously because position scarcity is an issue for the quarterback position. So I probably won't have Patrick Mahomes, unfortunately.
It's interesting you mentioned Josh Allen. That's going to be like owning Blake Bortles. And I like Josh Allen this year. I think that he's somebody that, he's the cheat code, right? He's going to rack up points on the ground. If he gets 40 rushing yards a game, that's an extra passing touchdown per game worth of fantasy points.
He needs it, though, because he's not going to have passing touchdowns in a lot of his games.
Yes. Yeah, you're right about that. You're definitely right about that. I've got him around QB 20, so I'm not super excited about him. But in a two quarterback league, yeah, I think he's a nice, safe option. Now, he's horrible to watch play. You're going to have a heart attack, Andy, but I think he is going to rack up some fantasy points. I just want to mention this. In super flex leagues, quarterbacks don't matter as much as in two quarterback leagues. Because in super flex leagues, the replacement level is, what's the best running back or wide receiver I can pick up off the waiver wire? In two quarterback leagues, it's either I've got a starting quarterback or I don't have anybody. And so there's really nobody that you can pick up the waiver wire because there's 35, 40 quarterbacks owned in those leagues. So I would just say the value over replacement moves a ton between Superflex and two quarterback leagues. I would shoot to get three of the top 25 quarterbacks in a two quarterback league. Don't mess around.
Three of the top 25, it's going to put you behind the eight ball. I mean, if you wind up with three quarterbacks that are taken outside like the top 14 or 15, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Like, I'll take Kirk Cousins and Tom Brady. And, well, I guess Tom Brady's going like ADP 13, but you know what I mean? In an analyst league where he's going around 20.
No, and by the way, if you and your league mates are looking to shake things up, you know, this season or, you know, whatever, if you're trying to put together a league, maybe you start a second league just to try it out. Try Superflex. I do believe that it's going to be the future of fantasy football. It's just going to take a while for, you know, the cavemen to come around to the idea that change is good. It's like me, though. I think we're all like that in some way. Like, you know, you ever get like a new cell phone, even if it's like the same iPhone? I hate it. I hate my new phone because I'm used to everything on my old phone. But once you get used to it, you realize, I don't know how I ever did without it. So Superflex, I do believe, will become that league. It's just everybody's got to try it in order to understand why it's better.
That's a good way to put it, Tex. Andy, you're like a really big deal. You can make this change happen, right? You can force everyone to go to quarterback.
No, stop. No, I do not have that amount of control. And if we had anything close to that, I can guarantee you the first change Jason would make would be to fix what he views as broken quarterback scoring when it comes to giving rushing quarterbacks 10, you know, a point per 10 yards and
yeah,
point per 25 passing. And he hates the fact that, you know, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and those guys are disproportionately valued compared to what he views in the NFL. What I keep saying is we're not going to be able to make that move. Nobody's going to listen to us. I mean, you can't globally do that. You need some platform to make it the default, and then all of a sudden something will start happening. But
you mean like going on the Rich Eisen show? I think that's a platform.
That was your chance, Andy.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to embarrass you, Andy.
That's a different kind of platform. So
it's amazing the kind of stuff that you guys are doing, and it's great for the fantasy industry, and it couldn't happen to better guys. We love you three.
I really appreciate you saying that, and we've had a good time, and you know, I think we're with you in just being thankful that fantasy is growing and podcasting is growing, and we're, you know, it's made the NFL so fun and engaging, and that's why we play this game. And so would we have imagined that, you know, any of us get to do this for a living? Probably not, but it's fun that we do.
Yep.
Right. Okay, guys, I've got two more questions before we end the show and let Andy out of here. First, how does the strategy change in a 14-team league and an 8-team league? Tags, I'll let you answer this first.
I mean, it's a lot more top 18 leagues are just basically comes down to who stays healthy.
You want to go all upside on your bench because you'll be able to pick up someone whenever you want.
If I was, even if I was invited into a league with the fantasy footballers, I wouldn't play with them if it was an 18 league. I'm sorry, guys.
I agree.
No, like eight, no, seriously, if like 18 leagues, find someone else to donate some money to the league and just take up the other two teams. Like it's got to be at least 10. And if you do have eight for whatever reason, like let's say you don't want to break up your original league.
Add some more positions.
Yes. You better have like legitimately three starting running backs, four starting wide receivers, three starting flex, a tight end, and two quarterbacks. Like that's minimum, okay? But in a 14 team league, you kind of have to take some chances to win, right? Like you're gonna have like that's when I'm like more willing to go out on a limb on a player where it's like a Tyreek Hill appeals to me more in a league like that where it's like to win a 14 team league, your odds obviously go down from a 12 or a 10 or
7% chance, man.
I'm more prone to taking high upside players in those leagues and understanding runs when they're going to take place in those leagues where we talked about the turn, and that's why I hate it so much, especially if you get into like a 14 or a 16 man league and you're by the turn. It is the absolute worst thing just watching players come off the board. Like your queue is set and you're like, all right, this player is still there. I got no one on my board left and I don't even know who to pick because you just feel like you're reaching. So if you like someone, understand. Yeah,
if you go wide receiver there, Mark Ingram's your RB1. You're screwed.
That's my best advice for 14 or 16 team leagues is that don't expect your player to be there next turn if it's even anywhere close to their ADP. If you really, really want that player, you're going to have to reach a little bit.
Yeah. Andy, what do you think? Anything to add to that before we move on to the final question?
Not too much, but I do tend to emphasize like having a difference making tight end matters more in a smaller league than it does a bigger league. Mm-hmm. You know, week to week, you know, maybe you play the Travis Kelce owner at all in a giant league. You might not. So that would be the only thing I have to add.
So we were talking about, you know, changing quarterback scoring, adding a super flex. Everyone wants to get rid of kickers except for people who haven't ever considered it. But there's one change that I would make above them all. It's to make every league an auction league. And I've heard your questions. You guys want us to do an auction episode, and I really wish that we could. Guys, it would alienate 85% of our listeners. I'd love to talk about it all day because you can set your strategy however you want, get the team that you want. But Tags, just in general, what is your auction strategy?
Value. I did a 14-team Superflex league last night. I don't think I spent more than $33 on any player. Basically, I took value as it was presented to me. It was an industry league, and I posted it on Twitter. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. I was really proud of it because it's a 14-man league with Superflex, multiple other flex spots, three wide receivers. Like it was so deep, but my team legitimately looks like a 10 or a 12-man league. Like it's just... I did a great job, and it basically comes down to value. So it's all about getting your cheat sheet set up. And the Draft Wizard, I hate to toot our own horn, but the Draft Wizard, I legitimately will not do an auction draft without it. Unless, like, I'm in a home league, I could do those blindfolded. But if you're in, like, a competitive league, Draft Wizard, have it handy. It adjusts for inflation. Basically, if players are going for more than you expected them to, it's going to raise a certain tiers of players higher, lower, depending on and where everything's going. I cannot recommend if you're doing an auction league.
It's going to help you win. Like, take advantage of your opportunity to win your league.
Yeah, it's necessary as far as I'm concerned.
I feel like Andy, auction values also separate the guys with more fantasy football skill, and it's not as much about luck. Like, oh, you got the 1-1 pick, you're getting Saquon Barkley. Now,
Alvin Kamara.
In auction drafts, we're looking at Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey going for 60, 70 bucks sometimes. All of these auction calculators on any site, on our site as well, spit out $52, $53 for these guys. Are you willing to pay that premium price? Or are you like Tags and myself and not really willing to spend more than 35 bucks on anybody?
I might spend it on one or two stalwarts for my team and look to get value everywhere else. If I feel like there's a, you know, the tier break is happening and I'll try to get the best value at the bottom of the tier.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree. I mean, Tags, you know, dominating the way you do with the value pick. I agree with that. I think some basic suggestions are things like, you know, not nominating all the players that you want. You know, these are like introduction to auction type of stuff, but
right.
Let other people nominate your guys. Let other people go out and spend at the top of the tier and then get value at the middle of the tier before people start getting desperate at the end of the tier. I like auction drafts a lot. I don't think it's this binary thing where, you know, one is superior to the other. I think you're right about the fact that it probably prioritizes a little bit of acumen, and that can be good and that can be bad. I mean, a lot of us play fantasy football for the fun of it, and you know, people have different skill levels and you know, the playing field. So I think it's you know, it's a both and situation for me with auction drafts, and I like them. They're fun. They're definitely a totally different approach.
The one final tip that I would give, and I think this is extremely important, is at the end of the draft, everyone's going to have $4 left over for four players. If you've got your four final bench spots and you've got $8 or $11, then you'll be able to have your pick of the litter with all the guys left. You might be able to get a Tony Pollard for $2 when everybody else is, you know, dealing with, I can't even think of guys right now, like TJ Hawkinson's going for $1, DK Metcalf. You can get a major upgrade on your bench if you just save a couple extra dollars left over at the end.
Yeah, the couple extra, I'm not so worried about that, just because like usually if you're in a 12 or a 14 man league, by the time you get down to the final picks, a lot of the bigger guys have been nominated, and like it's rare to sneak through in that area. Like last night, the best value I saw, and I tried to pay attention to that stuff so I could share it, was that Darwin Thompson. He wasn't nominated till later, and someone did get him. I think it was for like $8 because the people were running out of money. So it's fair to do that at some point, but you have to understand that there's going to be a point where it's like, you never, ever want to leave money on the table. You never want to have, you know, $5 left at the end of an auction, because that means you may have gone up one more dollar and got somebody, two more dollars, whatever it might be. So I'm not a stickler for saving money towards the end of the draft. It just depends on who's being nominated. If you have a bunch of lower tier players being nominated, absolutely save your money. But once those top tier players are gone, they're gone, and people are just going to reach for their guys.
All right, Andy, I'm not going to let you get out of here without telling us one must-have player that you want on every one of your teams. Do you have a guy?
I do, and it's my fantasy MVP for the year. It's Sony Michel. I just think the value on Sony Michel is ridiculous. I've been in love with Sony since the playoff run. I felt like when I was watching what New England did through the playoffs, it was Bill saying, this is how I want the offense to run. And yes, there are clouds, injury concerns, things like that. But I just love the value, because there are only a handful of players in fantasy football that have legitimate potential to put up 15, 16 touchdowns if the season goes the way that, you know, the head coach and the offense wants it to go. So Sony, to me, looks like guaranteed value. And for goodness sakes, if for some reason we see more targets go his way, you know, there's a preseason game where I was pretty sure James White caught a pass and it was Sony Michel in the middle of the field. And I was like, what if? Just what if it's 30, 35 receptions is all we're talking. So I think my big favorite this year has got to be Sony.
He did it in Georgia.
Andy, great advice as always. Really appreciate you making the time to come on.
Absolutely, guys. Best of luck.
All right, and I want to say thanks to the sponsors of today's show, Draft, which is the best place to play best ball. And they've got that $3.5 million best ball championship on Draft. You can sign up for your free shot at the $1 million top prize by using my promo code FANTASYPROS. Just search Draft in the app or Play Store, or go to draft.com and come play free with promo code FANTASYPROS. And also Monkey Knife Fight, where you can claim their first-time depositor bonus of up to $500 at monkeyknifefight.com and use that promo code FANTASYPROS, all one word, to get your bonus. And also don't forget to check out our draft assistant at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Guys, I absolutely love this tool. I can't imagine doing my drafts without it. So check it out at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. And remember, that's only for MVP and Hall of Fame members to sync your draft assistant with their online drafts. And you can go Hall of Fame now with a special $10 offer at fantasypros.com/offers. In fact, if you're a first depositor to Monkey Knife Fight, you can get their bonus, and you can get 6 months of our Hall of Fame package, a $65 value. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers. For Andy Holloway and Mike Taglier, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. Amazon.com/compatibility.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number 1 podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.